101.9 FM here on the UBC campus in Vancouver. Today we have a really special treat. We're going to have a discussion with an authenticity coach, pardon my speech impediment, Norma Hollis. And Norma is an expert on authenticity, and she has created a global movement called the Global Authenticity Movement. And let's see if she's ready and available for us.
I'm ready and available. You're and smiling and thankful. Yes.
So I guess good morning to and welcome to the show. And
thank you.
I have to say thank you for doing the work that you're doing also, because I'm sure you're helping lots of people.
I am doing my best to do that, absolutely. Thank you for acknowledging that.
Yeah. So I guess first off, what does it mean to be authentic? What does it mean by authenticity?
Authenticity is an interesting word that is one of the buzzwords in society today. And one thing that's interesting is that authenticity would not be such an important, such a common concept if there weren't so much inauthenticity in the world. So when I refer to authenticity, I look at the standard, definitions of sincerity, honest, trustworthy. But I also add a couple things. Number one, I focus on the common good and what's good for humanity, not necessarily good for just the individual themselves. And also using your natural gifts and talents and being authentic in who you are. My work on authenticity focuses on self-awareness and more knowledge of oneself.
Okay, so the first step in being authentic to the rest of the world, it sounds like it's to be authentic with yourself. Is that what we're getting at here?
Absolutely. That's the foundation of authenticity is a relationship with your inner voice, with the voices that speak within, which the part of yourself that truly who you are that nobody sees and only you really communicate with. Mm-hmm. So that's really where authenticity begins.
Okay. So how do we start down that path?
Well, actually we start on that path when we're very young children, because we come to the planet pretty much free-flowing, stepping in our gifts and talents and expressing them without any filtering. And then we get conditioned, modified through our well-meaning adults in our lives who tell us oftentimes, don't sing so loud, don't talk so much. You can't do art as a career. You can't make any money doing this. And so we begin to step away from the authentic person that we were born as. What I tell people to do as adults to step back into their authenticity is to learn to listen to the inner voice that speaks within. We're all born with a GPS system, a system that of a voice, that speaks to you. And sometimes we lose track of that voice, or we're led to believe that that voice is not real. And what I encourage people to do is think about the way that you answer yourself when you ask yourself, what am I going to wear? Or what am I going to eat? And these are things we say every day. And we keep eating. We don't leave the house without clothes on. So we're obviously getting an answer. So does it come as a feeling, as a memory, as something emotional, as a taste in your mouth, as, just how does it come to you? And when you start looking at that, you can begin to see.
Bless you.
Thank you. You can begin to see how your voice speaks to you and begin to connect with that voice and build a relationship with it. That's how you end up being more authentic and connecting more with your authenticity.
Wow. That's, I don't know, that just kind of makes sense. So I don't know what else to say then. That just makes sense.
It does. But, we lose sight of that because we're so taught to believe in what you can see, feel, and touch. And we don't trust our the voice that speaks within as much as we could and should.
Yeah.
One of the things I tell people is when they start hearing that voice speak to them, mm-hmm. you can test it. Because, you know, sometimes people say, was it the right voice? Or how do I know it's the voice I should listen to? And I had that happen to me when I was really a young child. And what I did is what I recommend for people now is when that voice first started talking to me, when I first recognized it, I said to the voice, all right, if I know about God, I know about, you know, voices, and I have some feeling, understanding of that, but not a lot. And if you're the voice that I really should listen to, then prove it to me, because you must be pretty powerful because you got my attention, right? So mm-hmm. prove it to me by in the next week, show me somebody with red socks on, and then show me someone else, let someone else mention the word elephant in the conversation. And if that happens, maybe I'll believe you. And sure enough, it happened. And then I did other things in the next 3 or 4 or 5 weeks. And then eventually the voice kind of said, well, do you believe me now? Can we stop this game of testing? And that's when I learned to how to recognize that voice and listen to it and respect it and build a relationship. And the way people know that they're building that relationship and they're trusting it more is when you find yourself saying less often, doggone it, I knew I should have done that. Because your voice tells you to do something, and you rationally say, no, I'm not going to do that, or whatever reason you give it. But when you stop saying that as much as maybe you did in the past, then you know you're listening more intently.
Very interesting. So is this part of what makes you an expert on authenticity?
Yeah, well, you know, I became an expert not by design, but by default, if you will. When I was 28 years old, I had done everything that my parents advised me to do to have a good life. So I had the degree, I had a good job, I had a husband who had a good job, we had a house, we had nice cars, and, you know, all the things they tell you you're supposed to do in your 20s. And I was absolutely miserable. And I had no clue what to do with myself because I didn't know who I was. I was raised in a very traditional family. And there's not much about me that's traditional. And they didn't understand and did not really know what to do with me. So by 28, I had to shift my entire life. And that's when I got out of the marriage and, you know, all that stuff. I actually moved from Detroit to California. But that's mm-hmm. also when I started on the journey of dissecting myself and figuring out who am I? And therefore, you know, what's going to really make me happy on this planet? And that's when I found out that I had three voices within me. I have an inner voice that I just talked about.
Right.
I have an outer voice. That's how I am perceived, what people see when they see me and what the assumptions that they make, what that voice speaks to them. And I have an expressive voice, which is who I have become. And I just kept going down the path of understanding that. And 30 years later, I had a speaker's bureau and I had a coach. And I had written a number of workbooks, or I call them inventories, take inventory of yourself. And I didn't know what to call. I didn't know what I had done. And my coach said to me, well, Norma, that's all. You've done something on authenticity. You're all about authenticity. And that's when the light went on. And I said, I guess that's what I've done. So I didn't seek out to do that. It kind of happened by default, just following the path of my life, listening to my own inner voice. And since I had the bureau, I had a chance to test the things I had written and the things I had done on other people and found out that was them as well. And then I was on a roll from there.
Wow. So your life just kind of evolved into
yes.
this path.
And it's still evolving on the same path, yes.
Now, there's an interesting thing because most people think that there's a point in your life that you stop evolving, and you just said you're still evolving.
Oh, I will be evolving the day I die.
it's just you know how you listen to people and you notice little things that people say and don't say,
right?
And I find that very interesting.
Let me tell you the foundation of that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I used to own a speakers bureau, and I've been coaching speakers for 20 years. And when I work with speakers, one of the first things I do with them is help them find their message. What's the message that they are to share? Mm-hmm. And the way that I approach a message is to look at the threads or the theme of your life. What I have found is that all people pretty much have a theme or a thread in their life that continues to show up, and it shows up in different ways. And when you begin to look at that and study it, you can see how that thread has evolved over time. So it's my belief that when we talk about having purpose, that that purpose is aligned to that thread or theme that keeps showing up. And our jobs are to keep building on that, keep evolving through that. And that's when we really end up with the masterpiece that we call our life and what we can leave as a legacy for those people who we choose to touch in the world.
So how do you help people find that thread to begin with?
Well, I have a one-on-one. There's two ways I do it. Mm-hmm. On a one-on-one basis, I have a 90-minute session I do with people, and I ask them a series of questions like who they've been, who they are, who they want to be. And I listen very intently to what they tell me, and I begin to hear certain patterns, and I begin to hear certain phrases that they repeat a lot. And then that caused me to ask more questions. So just through a very intensive one-on-one conversation, I can pull that out of people. Can't always pull out everything in 90 minutes, but I can certainly give a great foundation and put someone on a roadmap, you know, to move further if they choose to. Now, another way that I do that is I turned all of my authenticity information into an assessment, an authenticity assessment, which is available online, complimentary, and so I also direct people there. Mm-hmm. I also do that assessment with people on a one-on-one or in a group situation, and then give them coaching and direction to interpret the assessment and look at ways that they can coach themselves to improve their lives.
So that becomes very valuable information to you if you're coaching them, and to that person as they move forward and their life evolves?
Absolutely, because to me it's all about self-awareness. The research shows that your life is more meaningful and a lot happier when you know who you are. And so the system that I've developed is all about helping you know yourself in a deeper way. So absolutely.
Okay, not knowing who you are, is that a big problem today?
Well, yeah. It's in my opinion, we are often led to be robots. We're led to fit into a box. You know, we come to the society with our own gifts and talents, with who we are, excited about being in this new body and living this new life. And then after a while, we realize, well, this society was here a long time before we got here. And the society has certain ways in which it operates that we have to fall into in one way or another. There is a range, but still you have to fall into it. But some of us are really more outside of the box. And I think most of us begin life outside of the box. And as time goes on, as the adults tell us who we really need to be, we get more and more in the box. And just like when we get into kindergarten and first grade and have to sit at our desk, and as opposed to playing like we do in preschool and out in our families and what have you, we end up staying in those desks and in those boxes and in the cubicles when we're adults, and we lose sight of who we are. I have met a lot of people when I had my bureau who came out of the corporate environment. They might have been there 10, 20, 30 years. And one of the things that they say, and almost universally I hear this, is I've forgotten who I am. I had to be this person to work in the corporate environment, in that culture. And in the process, I've been there so long that I forgot who I am. And so I have to help them step back into being the person that they truly were born to be. Because, and then the other thing about life that I find so interesting and fascinating is how in our 20s, we're led to believe that that's the time to find a mate, make babies, get a mortgage. And yeah, those are the things that will keep you in the box for the next 20, 30, 40 years, because you now have commitments financially and responsibility. And I'm not saying that it's all a bad thing by any means, because there's a lot of joy that comes with it as well. But in our 20s, really, we're ill-equipped to make those kind of lifelong decisions. And then we're stuck with them, and that's where the sources of stress and other things, and that's where the evolution sometimes ends, because the focus is now on how do I pay the bills? How do I get the kids to school? How do I keep my spouse happy? How do I keep, right. And ourselves happy? That is barely even an issue. It's just more money, more money, more money.
Well, yeah, and one of the things that I found through time is I can't make my spouse happy. I can't keep my spouse happy. I can only keep me happy and hope that I'm being selfless enough to allow them to be happy along with me.
Absolutely.
That's one of the things. It's like you can't make another happy. You can only provide the environment.
So that's my point too. Because if you're not making yourself happy, you're not providing the environment that's going to make your help and enable your spouse to be happy.
Right.
So yes, because if you're stressed out, you're not following your gifts and talents. Your money is funny. Your values are different. You don't know who you are. You know, you've got some issues growing and brewing. You've got issues evolving. Okay.
Yeah.
So yes. So true. You don't make your spouse happy, but you definitely want to create an environment where you're not impeding your spouse's happiness.
Yeah. And you were talking about our 20s, and I've gotten in trouble with this one because I was speaking to kids, and I said to them, I said, university isn't a place where you go to learn to do a job. It's a place where you discover who you are so that you can grow into the person who's going to do the purpose that you're supposed to have. Parents don't like hearing that one.
No, because parents are led to believe it's all about a job. It's all about a job. Right. But you know, to your point, the millennials and their children, the jobs that they will have when they become adults, 70% of them have not even been developed yet. So you cannot raise a child to a job. You can raise a child to their gifts and talents and make them so good at what they're good at that they can find a job, because there'll be more jobs out there, coming up. Mm-hmm. They'll be able to find a job that's based on who they are. But the biggest thing that happens, and my background, my first career was in early childhood development with preschoolers.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I find that's so that I just disagree with what a lot of mainstream people say, and that's that parents want their children to read, in the womb, they say now, But what the first 5 years builds character, and the character you want is honest, trustworthy, and you want them to know who they are. Mm-hmm. You want to recognize their gifts and talents and help them to build on that, because the research also shows that by the time they're 7 or 8, they all catch up with each other. So why rush it? Focus more on the spiritual development of the child, helping the child be who they are, knowing their personality, finding out where their gifts are, helping them to build their gifts. And when you think about someone like a great basketball player or a great gymnast and the gift is found very early in life, and they become successful because they build the gift, not because they say, well, the family business is accounting, so the kid's going to be an accountant, and the kid's a basketball player. So you're depriving the child of their happiness when you think you can establish what their life's going to be. You can't do that.
Yeah, I totally see that point, and I know you as a parent. I try to make sure that my kids have the best path, but in the end, what you discover is you can't pick that path for them. That they had to actually go and pick the path themselves. So I have to go to a break in the station ID here. Okay.
Okay.
So hang on 1 second. You're listening to CITR and the Community Living Radio here on 101.9 FM. I am so tongue-tied today. And also here on the NCRA networks. We will be back with Norma in just a second.
Hey, did you know?
More than 4,500 Canadians are waiting for an organ transplant right now.
Right now. 4,500.
People are dying.
And you could save a life. 90% of Canadians say they're willing to donate their organs.
But only a few are registered.
So what are you waiting for? Get registered.
It's easy and it's free.
Leave a legacy. Be a hero.
Save a life.
Find out how to register today. Go to kidney.ca.
And we're back with Norma. And also, Ben just joined us in the studio, our long-term friend here who sometimes pops in, and he's come to join the conversation. And we're speaking with Norma Hollis. She is an authenticity expert and authenticity coach.
So, yes.
I guess we should continue on. We were speaking about childhood development, right?
Yes, and raising authentic children mm-hmm. by their gifts and talents. By who they, because you know the early ages, the parents' first focus, in my opinion, should be helping the child develop character, because that's what the first 5 years is really yeah. important. And if you're pushing them and moving them rapidly through trying to learn to read and they're not ready, then you're building in frustration in their character. And it's far more important to have those years be peaceful, joyful. Let them know how to be happy. Let them know how to feel to be loved and accepted, and helping them know their gifts and talents. And all the academics, all the other things that society requires, they'll come. Especially when they're when they have confidence.
Yeah. I totally see that one. You were going to say something, Ben?
No.
Okay. Your mic should be on, right? No? Okay, I don't know why you were. Maybe it's wrong. Maybe it's this one. Sorry. I usually don't do controls. Usually we have Kelly, our operator. He's actually in the Dominican Republic building homes for the people there with Habitat for Humanity. So
nice.
Yeah. Each one of us, we have a bit of a cause here. My cause that I always get involved with seems to wrap around chronic pain, and Kelly is Habitat for Humanity. So a little plug for Kelly there.
All right.
plus we miss Kelly, so I hope he has a safe trip going there and back too.
Yeah.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways that we try to stay true, at least somewhat true to ourselves here. So, yeah, but I totally understand what you're getting at with you know, building character, because as a parent, I thought it was fun watching my kids develop into that little person, right?
Yes.
Like, okay, what are they gonna be involved in? And you know what? My half my kids are grown now, and they're still figuring it out. You know, my oldest is 25, mm-hmm. and she's still figuring out, and she's a mom now. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we figured out all our lives. We're just figuring out different things, but they're still related to the same. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was a child, I asked my mother. I said, so mom, so what, by the time you get 60, is that when you get everything figured out? And she just laughed. She said, no, sometimes you never figure it out. So I think that's true. I think you figure out answers along the way, but I think we all just keep seeking and searching.
Yeah. And plus it takes time too, correct?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. And it takes a lot of mistakes sometimes to figure out the answers.
And plus you got to try and figure out in your mind too what you have to do, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
So, while we're at this, we have two different versions of the show. We have our half hour version, and we have our hour version. So we're about to break off for our half hour version.
Okay.
So, what are some of the best ways that people can get involved with working with you, and give them your website and contact information if that's possible?
Absolutely, and thank you for that. So first, I would like to invite your audience to take the authenticity assessment. That's a complimentary 30-question assessment online, and you can find it at BeRealTest.com. That's BeRealTest.com. And I'd be happy to hear from anyone. I am on Facebook as Norma T. Hollis. And I'm going to give you my, I have several websites, but if you go to normaspeaks.com, NORMASPEAKS.com. That's kind of an overview of the work that I'm doing and some of the products that I have and the opportunity to email me if you'd like to do that. So I'd love to be in touch with anyone. I do offer some complimentary one-on-one coaching calls. If anyone's interested, just email me and then we can talk or Facebook me and we can talk about getting that scheduled.
Okay, great. So thank you for those folks who were listening on the half hour show on CFRO 100.5 FM, and we're continuing the conversation here on CITR 101.9 FM. Yeah.
You got a lot of numbers there.
Yeah,
we're still trying to figure it out too, Norma. So it's
because
we have two different radio stations, two different days. Because one day is like an hour. And the other day is like only a half hour show. So
yeah.
And oh yeah, that can get confusing.
And then we also provide a larger network that goes across Canada with a program exchange both in the half hour version and in the 1 hour version. So
nice.
It's a bit of work, but it's how to get the message out there, right?
Yeah, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Yes indeed.
So that leads me into another question with you. With all the authenticity assessments and the coaching that you provide, how does it help people with balancing business and life?
Well, the assessment is based on the nine dimensions of authenticity. Mm-hmm. And when someone completes the assessment, and especially when they have the complimentary one-on-one after doing the assessment, then we can look at where their strengths and vulnerabilities are. I don't like to use the word weaknesses. I'd like to use vulnerabilities because we're vulnerable in that area unless we get someone to help us fill those gaps. So when that is completed, then I can look at the assessment results and provide some coaching in terms of business. For example, for myself, when I finish my assessment, I come across as what I call an inner voice thinker. And what that means is that I have a really good relationship with my inner voice, and I like to think and create. And so technically, and which is very true, I could be very, very happy sitting at home 90% of the time, being creative, solving problems, writing, doing things on the internet, just, you know, being introspective and me and my voice just changing the world, okay? But if I do that, chances are I'm going to be broke because I need someone that's a doer, that's going to take the things that I've created and put them out there in the world. Mm-hmm. So then from a business standpoint, the assessment interpretation helps me to see that if I don't get some doers on my team in my life somewhere, I'm going to have problems financially. So that's the way that I'm able to use the grid and the assessment. The assessment is a grid is a related piece to the assessment, mm-hmm. and help people to see where they're vulnerable in their authenticity. Now, a lot of people will tell you, especially particularly in business, well, you have to do this or you have to do that. And to do this or that means I have to be a different person because that the this and that you're talking about is not natural for me. It's not one of my gifts and talents. It takes me away from the things I do easy. It takes me out of my lane. So instead of the perspective I have to do that, what I have to do is I have to fill that gap. It is a gap, no doubt, but it's not necessarily of me changing who I am to do it. It might just be a matter of me bringing somebody else on the team who can fulfill that gap. And I can stay in my own lane. We all do much better, just as children are raised by their character and their gifts and talents to follow that for a career. We're all better when we do things in a career that's aligned with who we are and where our gifts are, as opposed to trying to be someone else. So the assessment really helps you look at because you need an inner voice. You need the outer voice. That's how you're perceived. The three voices are inner voice, outer, and expressive. You know, the inner voice you need for the guidance. The outer voice, you need to know how you're perceived by others. An expressive voice, you should be doing something in your life that you enjoy and has meaning to you. And then another piece of the assessment tells whether you are more of a thinker, a person who's more creative, or whether you're a communicator, someone who's like a networker and likes to get out. and or a doer and someone who really likes to make things happen. Mm-hmm. And you need all six of those, inner, outer, expressive, think, communicate, do, in order to be successful, in order to be authentic. So wherever your vulnerabilities are, let's identify them, and then let's talk about reasonable ways to fill those gaps. Because if those gaps are filled, you're going to find your life far more fulfilling.
That's a lot.
But it's okay. Easy. But I put together in a very easy to understand process.
Okay, so there's a process that makes total sense. Because otherwise it's like, oh, wait, my head's running in circles already.
Well, once the assessment is taken, mm-hmm. that the results are put on a grid that are very easy to read. So I certify coaches to teach this as well. And once you understand the grid, a light comes on. Right. And all of a sudden, you can even look at your whole life from a new perspective.
Very cool.
Yeah, it is cool. So, I've been very pleased with it, yeah.
Yeah, because as far as... Ben and I both work on this show, but Ben is a musician, and I'm a photographer and videographer, kind of camera guy, okay. kind of thing, right? So okay. we have two different shall we say professions, right? But one of the things that we also have in common is Ben's songwriting gets people knowing a story about something. Most of his songs start to tell stories.
Okay.
And, of course, me, when I go and photograph something, I photograph something with a story in mind. So,
right.
And there was a question that was supposed to lead into this, and I got confused.
That's all right.
But so I guess what it is your assessment would tell us if we were if in being that storyteller, if we're more the thinker of it, or if we're the person who's supposed to be out in front of the stage. Is that how this is supposed to work?
It will tell you that to some extent. Mm-hmm. One of the dimensions, there's 9 dimensions on this grid. And 9 questions, 9 focuses for the assessment. So in one of them, which is in the expressive voice, and it's in the think category, and it's called legacy. And when people think of legacy, they think generally of what they're going to leave for their heirs. Mm-hmm. But in this perspective, legacy means what was gifted to you when you were born. So what are your natural gifts and talents, and how are you using them? So as you told me about you and Ben, I thought immediately of the 2 gifts that those represent. So Ben has a gift of music. There's 9 different gifts that we talk about. And one of them is music, which Ben has. And one of them is visual. It's called visual/spatial. And that's you with the photography and the videography that has to do with, sight, scene, things, color, all that kind of things. But I would guess that you both also will fall high in the communicate area. Well, I don't know Ben, but I figure you would, Michael, because you do this show, mm-hmm. and which is another way of telling a story. So there are a lot of ways to tell a story. So, and then some people tell a story through the kinesthetic gift, and that's 4 of the gifts. There's musical, there's visual, there's verbal, there's kinesthetic, which is a dancer. If you have the same story, these 4 different people, gifted people, could tell the same story but in totally different ways, or could unify and tell it together for a greater visual. I guess that's kind of what a play does, or a musical play puts it together in different ways. So it's just we all express ourselves in different ways. We may have the same message, but we share it in different ways. Like one of the things that I learned when I owned my speaker bureau is that 99% of the people that I worked with wanted to make a difference in the world. That's what they were about. They had the same basic message, but they told it in a different way based on their gift, based on their experiences. And that's where that then is back to the word of evolve, and how we evolve from the gifts and talents we were born with and how those gifts and talents played out in the world, and then who we became because of that.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So we're even though we're all telling the same story, it's just we have a different way of getting it through us. So, yes. Part of being part of our being and purpose is actually to get the message from inside of us or through us, get it out.
Exactly, in whatever way is appropriate for you. Mm-hmm. And your way, you know, may be through the video or through the photography or even through your radio show. Right. And Ben's way may be through being on stage or being in his room, you know, doing singing or writing music or playing music or whatever is appropriate and most appropriate for him. And me, I might be here writing about it or going on stage somewhere speaking about it. And somebody else might dance about it. So it's just all different ways. Somebody else might do it because they may have a nature gift. Another gift is nature. And they may like to go out in a garden and tell their story through the flowers that they plant. You know, it's a whole different, the scenery that they can create by planting a garden would be a different story.
Now see, that's a completely different way than what we're told as kids. We're told that there's only one way to tell a story.
That's right. That's the whole point. Get in the box, kid.
Yeah.
Don't be yourself. Don't tell it your way. No, you're not singing right. You're not doing it right. You know, but I'm doing it my way. Your way's not right. Oh, what is something wrong with me? And then the whole self-confidence starts to die.
Yeah. So how? I mean, with the whole box thing, how many different ways does our society actually find to tell a child, hey, you're wrong. This isn't right. This is the only way to do it. It's kind of a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer that.
But what they do say is that for every no a child receives, they should receive four yeses to counter off the no. Because the no's are more emotionally impactful than the yeses are, or the good jobs, or the compliments. Because we spend a lot of time redirecting children and diverting their attention away from, especially when they're, you know, 2 and 3 and 4 and just getting around in the world and having to learn certain things. Don't touch that. No, don't do that. No, 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 no. And see, I knew these things. And when I raised my niece, I still found myself saying no a whole lot. I had to really force myself to find other ways to communicate those behaviors I wanted her to change. So it's a wonder any of us grow up to have any confidence given all the no's we need to hear. And we do hear in the process of growing up and the way that the well-meaning adults redirect our behaviors and our thoughts and the things we say and do to conform to what they think society needs.
Okay. So if I say no to something to my child, and you said four yeses to go with it. What would be a really good example of that?
Well, let me see. That's a good question. I haven't thought about that in quite a while. So you tell them no, maybe they did something, they took something out of your room that mm-hmm. that was inappropriate, and you got upset and you told them, no, don't do that or whatever. So you want to find as quickly as possible four ways to compliment them. Because the no, I mean, you watch a young child, when you tell them no, their head goes down, their lip pouts out, they cross their arms, you know, they get upset. But what, you know, childhood is supposed to be joyful and had a happy time. So the other thing to do is to look at how you can tell them no without saying no. So how you can redirect. So what are you doing? Let me suggest, go come do this instead. You know, this is something that belongs to mommy, and mommy's things are not to be touched. So it's just a different way of saying the same thing without the emotional, no, don't do that, you know, or mm-hmm. I told you, kid, don't do that. I'll give you an example of something I heard on TV a couple years ago during the Olympics. And I don't remember the gymnast's name, but this was a young man who won a gold medal. And they told the story in the backstory about how when he was a kid, probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 years old, his parents and him were at a department store. And they turned around and they could not find their son. They looked everywhere. And then they finally looked up. And he had found a way to climb to the ceiling of this high-level ceiling in this department store. Now, most parents would say, "Dad, go on and get yourself down here," and yada, 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 right? Mm-hmm. But these parents instead said, our kid likes to climb. What does that mean? Maybe he needs to go into climbing. How do we do that? Let's take him to the gym. Let's put him in gym school. Let's make him help him to be a gymnast. You want a gold medal. So it's a whole different way of parenting. So rather than the scolding, look at maybe what you can learn from the child and how you can help the child evolve in that learning.
Very cool. Okay, I need to play a couple promos, and I will be right back with you. Hold on.
Okay.
Finest in soul, dubstep, ghetto funk, and electro.
Oh man.
What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow, that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. Okay, dude. We get it.
Dude!
Only on CITR.
Okay, we are back on Community Living Radio, and we're speaking here on Skype with Norma T. Hollis, who is an authenticity expert. Okay. Sorry about that.
No problem.
It's like there's some business that has to be taken care of.
Yep.
So I can think of how many times I've said no to my kids and the situations I've said no to them. Now, one of the most terrifying things that I ever saw one of my kids do was my one daughter. She tried to climb into a 450-degree oven because I had just opened it up to put something in. I turned, and there she was trying to climb into the oven. And I was like, No. And right. I even hit her.
Yeah, well, no, that's different because that was a danger. It was a dangerous situation. You had to do that.
Yeah. Now, in another given situation, same exact kid, because she was a climber. Actually, all my kids were climbers.
Okay.
When I think about it, it's like, that's okay because Dad used to be a rock climber and.
Okay.
So it comes from somewhere, right?
Yeah.
But the first time one of my kids, we were in a park and there was a cliff, and it wasn't anything like. It's for me to rock climb it. It wasn't really all that big a deal. And she asked me, she said, can we climb it? And I looked at the cliff and I looked at her. She's five. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, okay, we can do this. So I didn't tell her no. I actually told her yes, we would do it. And I figured out a way as we were climbing to get her up the cliff. So I think about the situations where I said no and the situations where I said yes, and it makes you think as a parent, did I say yes to the right things? I say no to the wrong things. You know, it's just the things that go as you're bringing this up, like, did I do this right? So yeah. You know.
How old are your children now?
Oh, my oldest is 25. My youngest is 11.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, you can't help but some of these things. You know, the natural thing of parenting is you do end up saying a lot of no's because that's how you train in some ways. Mm-hmm. Now, when you mentioned about the oven, it's you're supposed to do that when they do something that's of danger. Absolutely. Because you never want them to do it again. You don't want them to hurt themselves. And she probably cried, and it's okay, because you needed to let her know that that's, you don't touch the oven. Absolutely not.
Right.
And interesting that you, when I think of no's, I think of no's that come from the child having done something wrong or something, but not so much no's as far as not agreeing to do something. So I'm glad you mentioned the climbing thing, because that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you didn't say no, because that allows a child to explore, and that allows a child not to be scared, and it builds a child's self-confidence to know that they can climb at a young age and be successful, then daddy's right there, and, you know, all those wonderful things. Yeah. So I don't want any parent to feel that they should never say no, because you can't raise a child without saying no sometime. I mean, it's just natural. I'm just saying, be more cognizant of when you say it, consider if you can say it in a different way. And also, even more importantly, is what's the tone of your voice when you say it? Because the tone of your voice when you said no, your child getting into the oven, I'm sure was a tone that made that child pay attention immediately. That's exactly what you wanted. So that's not a tone you want to use on a regular basis, because that's a tone that implies danger. Mm-hmm. So when the parent's life is stressful, and the parent is not really being their authentic self, and they bring that home, and therefore the tone that they speak with is not a pleasant and welcoming and inviting tone, and that happens repeatedly, that's when you begin to raise children that are neurotic, don't have self-confidence, don't know who they are, and that just ends up with long-term family issues. Because then you're constantly overcoming that and helping the child be more self-confident, wondering why the child is not. Not realizing it was just some little things you may have done when the child was younger and you didn't know any better and they didn't know any better. So what I'm just trying to say, some things that will help your parents, especially of young children, to know better and be able to modify some of the way that they approach things, particularly in the first 5 years. Yeah. They're so vulnerable then. They're just so vulnerable.
Well, that's the first 5 years, they want to explore anything and everything.
Right.
I have actually heard some parents say, "Well, my kid doesn't want to explore. Like, get something checked out. I don't know why a kid wouldn't want to explore."
That's a natural thing. We all explore new environments. You know, even as adults, that's what we do. We explore.
Yeah.
So that's a natural. It's a curiosity that we all have, and they're very curious at that age. They want to know everything, and they're learning it by watching the parents.
Right.
So just being aware of that can help parents modify to the best of their ability, you know, how they're living their life and what they're showing their children.
Yeah. So I want to get to this one question, though, before we really do start to run out of time. How do you think authenticity is going to make the world a better place?
Well, the one thing I think I mentioned earlier is that we wouldn't be talking about it unless there was so much inauthenticity in the world. And there's plenty of that. And it's, you know, society is a really interesting thing, because it seems like we move further and further away from authenticity as we move more and more towards, I'll call it me-ism, you know, and what I need for me. Mm-hmm. And there's a gentleman named Michael Drew, and he's a literary agent who's had over 100 books consecutively on the New York Times bestseller list. So he knows what he's doing. And he and his partner have a book called Pendulum, and they researched human nature for 3,000 years. And what they found in human nature is that every 40 years, the pendulum shifts. And we go from a society that's focused on me, I can be great, I am great, I can do this myself, to a society on we. No, let's be collaborative, let's do it together, you know, from that perspective. And when I heard him speak about the we time that we're in now, started in 2003, the word he used most frequently is authenticity. And so according to his research, we are in a 40-year cycle of the we and of authenticity and being authentic. And the 40-year cycle has a 10-year transition in and 10-year transition out, and 20 years where it's saturated, which is where we're entering year 4 of the saturation, which means we have 16 more years of being saturated with authenticity. So that's one perspective. Another perspective is if you look at the millennials and the baby boomers, and both generations are looking for authenticity. The baby boomers are saying, hey, you know, we didn't fix much. We kind of messed things up. And I've been in that corporate life for 30 years. And now that I'm out of it, I don't know who I am. So let me end up my life at least figuring out who I am and my authenticity. And the millennials are saying, dang, y'all got a messed up world here. What's all this thing about capitalism? Let me just do something to make a difference in the world first. I want to make a difference first. I want to be authentic before I figure out the rest of the stuff you guys are talking about. So both generations at each spectrum has a deep interest in authenticity. So it's around us. It is inevitable that it's where society has been moving for a while, and we're in it saturated right now. So it's a really important concept to understand and to bring into your life.
That is one of the things is like I finally started figuring myself out at about maybe 5 years ago. So
okay,
because I had spent like 20 years in the chemical industry, and then I spent before I spent the 20 years in the chemical industry, of course I spent. I think it was like 7 years trying to learn chemistry,
right?
To get the job, right?
right.
And somewhere along the way is like, I was told that, you know, oh no, that curiosity thing that you have, it's got to go. You can't have that industry. You have to just follow the standards. And
all,
you know, and now I'm like, oh, wait, I'm not doing that anymore. I was retired. I was lucky. I was retired at the age of 40.
Oh, you were lucky. Very lucky.
So the given situation, some people would say that, oh, that was a slap in the face. But I actually chose to see it as I was lucky that I was released early and I have time to figure myself out as I become older. So, I'm learning to be authentic and I discovered I always had an interest. It was a hobby, the photography, but now I'm learning that it's like, hey, it's a way I can explore the world. So that's what I'm doing. Okay. So once again, can you give us all of your contact information?
Yes.
And tell people the best way to get to immerse themselves into your process.
Well, the immersion into the process begins with taking the authenticity assessment. Mm-hmm. And that's a free online assessment. It's 30 questions. It doesn't take you long to do. You get the results. And then you get the opportunity for a complimentary 30-minute one-on-one with myself or one of my coaches to help you interpret your scores and help you to apply them for your own authenticity. And you can do that by going to BeRealTest.com. That's BeRealTest.com. You can also reach out to me on Facebook, Norma T. Hollis. Hollis is H-O-L-L-I-S. And the third thing is my website. I have several websites, but the primary one to start with is Norma Speaks, N-O-R-M-A-S-P-E-A-K-S.com. I have the other websites listed on there. There are some products on there. I talk about the different areas that I speak on and more about authenticity and the work that I do with leadership, with speakers, and with parents raising authentic children. So that would be me.
Okay. And Ben, you have one last question?
Let's say, for example, Norma, if people have Skype as well, can they Skype you as well?
Yes, they can Skype me. Thank you for asking. At Norma Hollis 21. NormaHollis21.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on to the show this morning.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted. I always love sharing authenticity information, and hopefully I said a few things that might provoke some thoughts for some people and maybe some behavioral changes for their children. Who knows? But thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you again.
All right.
You have a great day, okay?
I'll do that. Do the same.
Yes.
Oh, we will.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Great.
All right.
All right. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Okay. And it is time for announcements. Ben, do you have a few announcements to make?
Actually, I got one big, huge announcement.
Well, you got a few minutes to get it out there.
Okay, good. So basically, I got a show coming up on March the 5th at Fairview Pub at 898 West Broadway. It's between Broadway and Willow. If you know where TV Canada Trust is, it's very, very easy to get to. It's all by donation. The show starts at 8:30 and it goes till 10. I will be playing, the band actually will be playing with me. We have two different sets. So the other one is going to be a Rio Samai band with special guest. I believe Michael is going to post that up on our Facebook page. Correct?
We will get it on to the Facebook page. That is correct. Yes.
And everybody will take a look at it and hope you guys to see you all out there.
Yeah. Cool. So, that's pretty much so it. Next week, we're going to have another really good friend of ours come on. I'm not sure if she's coming Skype, phone, or maybe even in person. I guess the in-person part would depend because she lives in Maple Ridge. And she is an awesome positivity person, Sheila Sutherland. So, she has a fantastic story, and she's always just fun to hang out with. It's like whenever I get together with her over a cup of coffee, I never stop laughing. She's just a really, really fun person. Something she tells a lot of jokes is just that.
And
she's
a good person to hang out with, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Sweet.
So, yeah. So, make sure you tune in next week to listen to us talk to Sheila Sutherland.
Sweet.
Yeah. Okay. So, and as time gets closer, I'll figure out with Sheila how we're actually going to get her on. Because it'll be, I know what it takes to get here from White Rock, and Maple Ridge is further out from me.
Yeah, because it usually takes about an hour drive from Maple Ridge to here.
Yeah. Well, with rush hour traffic, it takes me an hour and a half from White Rock. So, yeah.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. And that's hoping that all the traffic gods go in our direction and somebody doesn't do something goofy and slide into a ditch. A tractor trailer decide to flip its load. You know, one of those sort of things.
Or anything.
Yeah, yeah. So let me not jinx it. But yeah. So she'll be a lot of fun to have on the show. And Norma, she actually introduced me to another person that's going to help us speak about love. You know, the kind of love that we're supposed to fill the world with, you know, for our fellow man, and the kind of love that opens borders, or should we say tears down borders? Because maybe at this point in time, maybe internationally, maybe we should be tearing down borders, mm-hmm. relaxing them, you know, all becoming a global culture as opposed to building walls. Donald Trump.
Oh God, I can't stand Donald Trump. Oh yeah, speaking of before we go, but speaking of Donald Trump, I saw because I was trying to send a greeting card to one of my friends, right, to my mother or to somebody that I know, and Donald Trump was on there, and he was doing a dancing and singing.
Wow.
Singing happy birthday. That is weird.
Very weird. Anyway, so in 2 weeks, I think it's in 2 weeks, we look forward to Alfie Bell. And she is like really cool, and she's got some cool stories about also about how some people have overcome epilepsy. Some people in time, like Julius Caesar, Harriet Tubman, like real social heroes that that they just didn't let it get them down. So that's about it for today's show, and I'm going to flip it back over so that the next show can come up. Okay, and thank you for listening, and to everybody across Canada, across BC.